This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I'm not actually leaving from the office. I'm leaving from Walmart. I thought about doing another Walmart walkthrough thing, but you know, it's too much to be thinking about and going back and forth on all that kind of stuff. And my wife threw out her back. It's the first time, I don't know if she's ever done that in a long time, but I don't know ever, but it's the first time she's done it in as long as I can remember. And it happens to me occasionally, and so she was needing a few extra supplies from Walmart today, so I swung by to get those. And so I'm actually closer to home than I normally am, but I'll just talk when I get back to the garage because I'm in the process of losing my light. And if I don't start home at this point, as opposed to driving around to make 20 minutes, I'm not going to be able to see my notes. So anyways, good week this week. Everything's going fine this week. I got restarted. I think I mentioned last week that it was going to be interesting to try to get restarted after being off for so long. And it was fun because there were a couple of people that, when I asked them how their holidays were, they had the same response as I did. Well, it really was nice. Said, we're kind of ready just to stay home. Yeah, I said, I understand perfectly. But, you know, gotta make some money. Or maybe you don't. I heard about the Peace Pilgrim this week on the news. And when I heard about it, I thought, oh, I should do some more research on that. I might do a podcast on that someday. Peace Pilgrim is what she called herself. She wore the same clothes or the same outfit. I don't know if she had multiples, but same outfit every day. Blue tunic, blue pants, had Peace Pilgrim on the back. She had a little notebook she carried in her pocket and some pencils and just a few other little trinket things, and that was it. And she walked for peace. No money. Did this for like, I think it was 25 years or something like this. She just walked. Never asked anybody for anything, she said, but people would give her meals, they'd give her a place to stay, that she just walked. Very interesting, because one of the alternatives to the life that we feel we must lead, of going to work and earning a paycheck, one of the alternatives is to do what Jesus did. Walk around with some guys, talk to people, ta-da. So yeah, gotta think about that some more. Haven't done any work this past week on the on Far Forth Fables. Just took a little vacation. Been reading a really interesting book called The Long Tail, T-A-I-L, and been mulling on that. Had a really nice, wonderful visit over Christmas, you know, with my kids, because we're only 300 feet away, excuse me. And then my nephew came into town with his new wife. Quasi-new, they've been married a year, but they still seem very much like newlyweds, and it was great to see them. We had a wonderful time with them. We took them around to some of the things to see in Springfield and then down to Branson, and wanted to go to Lambert's, home of the Throde Rolls, but there was almost an hour and a half wait to get into Lambert's, so we decided not to do that. But just really had a nice time. It was just really good. Then went back for one day on Monday of work, and then I was off on Tuesday, and then went back in yesterday and today, and I'm off tomorrow. So it's good. It's good. Life is good. Have potentially a couple of new friends. There's a younger man that my godson, Charles McDonald, had mentioned he was going to give him my name, and he called, and so I'm having coffee or water or something with him Monday night, and then I'm going to have dinner with a coworker on Tuesday, so we'll see how that all works out. That may develop into a more regular visit, or it might not. We'll see. It'll be fine. Anyways, this week, I was watching a TED Talk, and I actually have a couple of things that I can do talks on at this point, do podcasts on, and I watched this TED Talk, and I thought, oh, this has a lot of interesting information in it, and I actually used this today, because today I was just reading an article about how fructose... Oh, what was the article? How fructose affects your brain or something like that. And I'm reading this article thinking, yeah. And then I remembered what I was going to talk about today on the podcast and went, oh, hold up, back up. Because the name of the TED Talk was Beware Neurobunk, by a researcher named Molly Crockett, neuroscientist. It's very very interesting little TED Talk. I'm always a little bit interested not only in the TED Talks, but in how people approach the TED Talks as human beings, how the speakers approach them. Because several of them express their trepidation and their pre-talk jitters. This is very interesting. And this Molly Crockett, okay, she has a PhD. She is a neuroscientist. And as she's talking, you could tell she's just a little uncomfortable being in front of all these people. And you could just kind of hear it in the back of her mind. I hope you all like me. Which I thought she did a great job. So anyways, it's just interesting. It's just very interesting. Anyways, what she studies is decision making. And she does experiments trying to figure out how different chemicals in the brain influence the choices that we make. She started off with a very, very interesting statement. She said, okay, she said, I'm here to tell you that this is the key to successful decision making. And a toasted cheese sandwich popped up on the screen. She said, this is it. She said, that's right. The key to success, according to scientists, for making good decisions is a toasted cheese sandwich. And of course, everybody laughed. And she said, you may be wondering how I know this. She said, because I'm the scientist who did the study that, according to her, apparently proved this. She said a few years ago, she and her colleagues were trying to isolate the effect that serotonin had on decision making. And specifically, they wanted to test how serotonin would affect the way people react when they're treated unfairly. So that was their specific wonderment. So they designed this test. They figured out how to give people an artificially flavored drink that, according to her, was disgusting tasting. And it artificially takes away the raw ingredient for serotonin in the brain, and that ingredient is tryptophan. it's an amino acid. So by drinking this drink, what they were trying to accomplish was to lower people's serotonin levels by lowering their tryptophan level. She said what they found was that, for instance, people are more likely to take revenge when they're being treated unfairly if their tryptophan level is low. So that's the study they did. They published their results. She said she was quite amazed at the headlines that began popping up, supposedly supported by this study. One of the headlines was, "A cheese sandwich is all you need for strong decision making." Another one said, "What a friend we have in cheeses." Another one, "Eating cheese and meat boosts self-control." And she said, "I'm reading these things and I'm thinking, am I missing something?" So one of them was, "Official!" exclamation point. "Chocolate stops you from being grumpy." And she said, you know, cheese, chocolate, where in the world did all this stuff come from? Well, people took the study. The reporters, the science bloggers took the study and said, if lowering your tryptophan caused you to seek revenge when you're treated unfairly, then obviously raising your tryptophan would have exactly the opposite effect. And cheese and chocolate apparently are high in tryptophan or help you raise your tryptophan, therefore. And she said what amused her was, in fact, they did no research on raising people's tryptophan. They did no research on feeding them chocolate or cheese. She said, but simply because tryptophan happens to be found in cheese and chocolate, people drew these conclusions. Because those are the headlines that grab people's attention. Those are the headlines that get you viewers. And as I'm learning about in the book The Long Tail, which I might be talking about later, what it's really about is attracting viewers and readers consistently. And she said she had to admit that a part of me thought, well, you know, what's the big deal? Okay, fine. No big deal. She said, this happens all the time. She said, but that is the problem, because it does happen all the time. And she said it affects not only the news that you read, but the products that you buy and see on the shelves. She said, with the headlines rolling over what her study had said, it was inevitable that the marketers would come calling. They wanted her, for instance, to be willing to provide a scientific endorsement for a mood-boosting bottled water. Or would she go on television to demonstrate in front of a live audience that comfort foods really do make you feel better? And she said, you know, if she had taken them off on their offers, she would have gone way beyond the science. And she said, good scientists try to be careful not to do that. She said, neuroscience is turning up more and more in marketing. She showed one example of this drink called NeuroBliss, or Neuro Drinks. And one of them was NeuroBliss, which according to its label, helps reduce stress, enhances mood, provides focused concentrations, and promotes a positive outlook. And and she said that, I have to say, that sounds awesome. But of course, when she went to find out what scientific studies lay behind all of these claims, there were zero. The other thing she said that was fun was that there's been research done. She said she noticed that, I think it was on a lot of these neuroscience things, products, they always have a picture of a brain. It's a brain. And she said the amazing thing is that there's actually been studies done where they have a control group that just reads an article, and then they have another control group that reads the same article, except it has a brain on it. And she said, people, there is a statistically significant difference in the way people view the articles, whether it's just the plain article or it's the article with the brain on it, that people actually believe the article more if it has a brain. If it has a brain on it. So she said the clear message for marketers here is that if you want to talk about neuroscience and you want to have people believe your article, it's really good to remember that they should put a brain on it. I'm getting my mail. One moment. So all of that was fun. And the basic talk is that she was trying to get across. Was that there is a lot of research these days being done into neuroscience. And she said there's a lot of cool stuff happening. She was saying MIT scientists may have figured out how to break habits in rats by controlling neural activities in specific parts of the brain. She said, but the research is early. And so we don't know for sure, and rats are different than humans, and you just don't want to overblow the research before you really know. So she said, when you're dealing, I'm backing into my garage. One moment. She said, when you're dealing with all these claims of what neuroscience has proven and what you can get from consuming this or consuming that, she said the thing you really have to watch out for is neurobunk, neurobollocks, which are all the same thing, and she said, or her personal favorite, neuroflapdoodle. Neuroflapdoodle. I had never heard that term before, neuroflapdoodle. And she gave a couple of really good examples. I guess there was an article that came out I was talking about the fact that you love your iPhone, literally. And it was because they had taken people and put them in a neuroscanner and had showed them pictures of the iPhone. And when they showed them pictures of the iPhone, that there was an activity in their brain, area in their brain called the insula that activated. So, and that's the area of the brain that activates when you're in love. And so obviously you literally love your iPhone. But she then followed that up by saying that a lot of things happen in the insula. Tons of processes like memory, language, attention, anger, disgust, pain. So it really means nothing that there's activity in the insula. The other thing she said that's going on at this point, another one of the things that she kind of clued into, and I've heard this one too, that supposedly the scientists have figured out the glue that holds society together, you know, the source of love and prosperity, and it's not a cheese sandwich, it's the hormone oxycontin. Oxytocin. Oxycontin is a painkiller. Oxytocin. And, you know, they've got one scientist that's out there calling it the moral molecule. She said, but the problem with that is, she said, other studies have shown that oxytocin increases envy, it increases gloating, it biases people in favor of their own group. And in some cases, oxytocin can even decrease cooperation. So she was really, really encouraging people, you can't just take the medical headlines that are being written just to garner attention and base everything that you believe on that. She said there's also a brain imaging technology called SPECT imaging, and there are places now that if you'll come in, they'll give you a SPECT image and then they'll diagnose all your neurological problems based on this SPECT image. And she said, you can't base and diagnose based on one SPECT image. She said, you just can't do it. But there are clinics that are pulling in millions and millions of dollars. So what can we say about all this? Well, her conclusion was that she is very excited about what neuroscientific research can do and where it's heading. And she said, but at this point, we haven't found the buy button inside of a brain to make people buy things. She said, we haven't been able to tell whether someone is lying or in love just by looking at their brain scans. And she said, we can't turn sinners into snakes. So we can't turn sinners into saints, not snakes, just with hormones. She said, okay, maybe someday we will. She said, but that day is not here. And she's concerned that people making these overblown claims will actually take away attention from the real science that she's engaged in. So here's her advice, and I thought it was good advice. If someone tries to sell you something with a brain on it, just back up a minute and say, wait a minute. Do I just think that this is a really good thing because it has a brain on it? And if you're going to alter your behavior based on some medical headline, it probably is a good idea to back up a step and dig in deeper and see exactly what the original studies said that all those things were based on, the claims were based on. And that's always good advice. Because as we travel through this life, the easiest thing for us to do is to just take the pieces that fit with our preconceptions of the how life works and just plug them in and say, see, I knew that's the way it was. That reinforces me. When it's better if you just kind of take a pause and say, okay, what are we really talking about here? And how useful is this claim? And is it really substantiated? I will confess to always having my eyes open to substantiate my claims of the war within us of flesh versus spirit. But I will also confess that I am ready to tell people, I don't know exactly what's going on inside me. I don't know if it's just the reptile brain versus the higher brain and my proclamations of a flesh versus spirit are overblown. And frankly, I'm ready to set aside that model at any time. But the reason I like that model so much is that it works really well. So I try not to be diehard, gung-ho, you can't change my mind about these types of things. But I also try to find things that work and then from that use them and build up to the next thing. So, lesson for today, if you see a brain on something, say, wait a minute. If you read some study headline that claims some study has proved some medical thing about something, sure, read the article. But if you're really going to start changing your behavior based on that article, probably would be a good idea to kind of dig down underneath the headline, find the studies that they're talking about. Go read the studies themselves. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.